Give them a phone call. I could do that. Ooh, I gotta check this one out. This one looks good. This one looks good.
Connor, I'm so happy to have you on here. What I like to do is I like to start off with a little banter.
Okay.
According to polls, humans like banter. According to most research, recent research, people like banter. So,
what research are you reading?
Well, you know what? This is actually really good banter. This is the best. No, Connor, thank you so much for jumping on. Here's a couple. Well, here's what we'll do. We'll introduce in just a little bit. We will. I'll give you some time to. I want to know more about you, or more about, you know, where you're coming from, what you do, a little bit about your history, and then we're going to get into your craziest work story.
Okay.
We'll talk a little bit about it. Banter. I'll ask you a question like, hey, what's, you know, what's the big lesson, a lesson that you've learned from, you know, that job experience. And then, after that, you get to give me that quote that is, that represents one of the jobs I've had. And on the fly, I have to come up with the story, not just come up with it, but think about the story. And I'm telling you, all 38 have been, there's been some ridiculous and some wildness to them. And so I get to talk about it, and we get to talk about, and I definitely want you to jump in. I don't want it to be a one-way conversation where this is what I did. And because I don't think many people would be able to just sit [S2] Right. [S1] There and listen to some of the ridiculous stuff and not be like, wait, what happened with that again? So awesome. So Connor, here's why I'm, well, one reason why I'm really, well, no, questions first. Okay, so since we have
been
for like two, oh, this is great banter. Trust me, it's the Phil. If there's a bantometer, a banterometer,
it's way, it's redlining.
Oh my goodness, people! If this was live, people would be cheering. People would be watching the sports bars and pubs in the UK. Oh man, they're like, turn off that Manchester United game. Let's get on 38 at 38.
Let's do it.
So. I was just wondering, because I was thinking about this morning with myself. I'm sure since 2020, you, just like many others, have been on a ridiculous number of podcasts or a ridiculous number of like webinars or videos. Yeah. Do you have a ritual or something that you do, like you have to have a setup or something that you have to have before you go live on video?
Yeah, I make sure my bed's made because I live and work in the same room.
Hustle. I love it.
Hot, tall cup of coffee because I get very thirsty and I love black coffee. And make sure I got my Yeti and my webcam set up. That's it.
That's it. Very cool. How about this? Have you ever jumped on a podcast where you're looking professional up top, not professional down low?
Oh, yeah.
Like
all
you're
the time.
Just, yeah. Okay, like, you're like, right now I'm just wearing boxers.
I've been wearing gym shorts for 2.5 years in a row now.
The same gym shorts.
Sometimes, oh, for sure.
What I like is I like thinking back to whenever, you know, in the early 2020s. You know that fond memory, those fond memories that everyone likes to think back to, the early 2020s.
Oh yeah,
and early 2020, and the number of jokes that I heard were like, Hey, everyone wearing pants? I heard that so many times. So yes, we're all wearing pants. You should not be asking. You wouldn't be asking that question if we were face to face, bud. But let's still keep it HR policies. But so my routine, I realized while I, you know, there's certain things I need. I need water, and usually like a coffee. If it's before noon, it's usually coffee and a water. I've got my setup. This isn't where I usually work. I'm on the other side of the room at my desk, but this is my recording setup. And I realized something that I do. I've thought about it and known about it for a while. I put on cologne before I record.
Really?
I don't know. It puts me like if I get dressed up and I go somewhere, I usually put on a spritz of cologne, and I don't know, it's maybe a mental thing, but I put on cologne. What's funny about that is that I've been doing that even before, like 2020, it's just a thing that I've made me feel comfortable with. My wife and her father laugh and kind of poke fun at my wife's grandmother, her abuela, who every time she takes pictures, she has to put on cologne. Mm. Like every time she has to go take pictures, she has to put on cologne. I think my abuela, my grandmother, the same way. So I like to think that I'm following the footsteps of elderly Latino women. So that's what I do.
not the worst place you could be, right?
Not at all. Connor, how about this? All right, banter, done. ladies and gentlemen, welcome to 38 at 38. This is a podcast that, period, done. This is a podcast. On this podcast, right, we talk about ridiculous work stories. Every episode, I have a guest come in and they talk about their most ridiculous or worst job story that they have. And then we work episode by episode through a list of all the 38 different jobs I've had. Now, people say, I say 38 jobs. Matter of fact, I was training a class yesterday, second class I was training in this month-long series that I have. And they came back from break and I said, what? Shameless plug. And I had a slide up of the podcast. I was like, I've got a podcast. You should watch it. And I told them 38, 38. I told them, you know, I've had 38 jobs by the age of 38. And I got the regular response was, whoa.
That's a lot of jobs.
That's a lot of jobs. And they're absolutely right. It's a lot of jobs. But through the ridiculous stories that we'll be hearing on this podcast, it's not all, okay, I've had this experience, I'm done with you, I'm out. It's about the hustle. I've had three jobs at one time, multiple times. I started working very early. Both my parents set up in me a very strong work ethic where it's you hustle, you do, you get things done. Yeah. And Connor, the first time I spoke with you, which we've only spoke one other time, we were on no, I don't think I was a guest on the Tech Bar podcast. By the way, Tech Bar podcast every other Thursday in the evening comes off live. You got to check it out. It's a great,
I've been on twice. I'm trying to get on.
I've been on twice. I'm trying to get on that third time. Just trying. Hey, what are y'all up to? Huh? What are you? Two and a half times. They brought me in halfway through the first episode I jumped on. So they're like, who's this weirdo making all the comments? Bring him on.
That podcast is the opposite of this. It starts with the scheduled formatting and then devolves into only banter by about 30
minutes. Right. This is like banter scheduled formatting. It gets a little loosey goosey. I like it that way. The first time we spoke, just to kind of get more, you know, just trying to find out, you know, okay, what's your background? What's your background of work? I don't know if you remembered, I was extremely impressed, and not that I was like, surprise, but it's just like the whole time he's talking I'm just like it's crazy. No, but man, you were raised with some hustle and mm-hmm. you have continued that hustle and I love it. Connor, can you introduce yourself, tell us about yourself what's going on? Let's talk about your early hustle real quick.
So I'm Connor. I am currently today the CEO and co-founder of a company called Finn Security. Fun fact about me, I'm a triplet. So
did I know that? I didn't know that.
I don't know. But so, you know, when I said it, it's like, oh, how you doing? If I were any better, I'd be a twin. So there's a whole story behind. There's a whole story behind that.
That's a whole nother layer. Yeah, I love it.
I met this this old guy one time on a call, much like that, not a podcast, but a call. And he answered. Like everyone says, oh, I'm doing good. And not a single person has meant it since 2020, right?
Right. I'm fine.
Yeah, I'm good. Thank you. Can we get on with this?
No. Yeah, I'm not in one bit depressed.
Yeah. I'm wearing real pants. So this old guy answered with that. And I was like, what does that mean? I was like, I've never heard that. Is this some kind of like generational thing I'm not picking up on? And he explained, it is. It's basically like you have so much happiness, you need two people for it all. I was like, right. I'm taking it. And then I was like, you know what? I'm a triplet. So I was like, if I'm a twin, it's like, I've just had the worst day of my life. Like there's like these three levels of like, it's like a triple quadruple entendre. And it also immediately, just like it did here, like breaks the ice. Everyone's like, they kind of settle in and they're like, oh, okay. Like this isn't just some, I'm not going through the motions anymore. There's actually like, I'm actually talking with a human. So that's why.
So can I get morbid for just a little bit?
Sure.
All right. So you're a triplet.
Yeah.
And if you say, and honestly say, hey, any better, I'd be a twin. A couple things. That means that you could be down to one of you. Like, it's just you and your other, your other two is like, if I'd be a little better, I'd be a twin. If I'd be a more better than that, I'd be back to my triplet self. Like, oh, no. Or maybe you don't like one of your siblings. And you're like, if I'd be better if I was a twin.
So we're all three boys, all three of us, all triplets. I have one older sister, but we're brothers. We're definitely, we love each other and we're friends, but we are primarily competitors. It's like we
are you identical?
No.
Identical
no.
like the Jonas Brothers?
No, not
that's
at all.
Not right. That's not accurate at all.
No, I don't even think they're identical.
They're not even twins.
Yeah.
They're not even
twins. They're all different ages for sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, you'd know we're related if you saw us, but we are not identical.
Awesome. That's yeah, dude. See that so I do you have any other siblings?
One older sister.
One of those so four. See, that is so I'm seeing a lot of patterns. Maybe, you know, maybe it's that thing where I just see patterns where, you know, because I want to see them there. But what I see is a lot of people who have hustle. Generally, it's not coming from like a single, like they're the only child. Yeah. And I don't want to say maybe I'm sure there's some people out there. Awesome hustle. I don't want to take anyone out. But what I've seen is you've got some siblings. That means you got to hustle early. And you know, I've got one older brother and three younger sisters, right? So it was, you know, the joke about who's going to, you know, fighting to get the best pork chop or the last piece of chicken. Like, yeah, you got to, that's ingrained early. Like you got to hustle with it, you know?
I was about to say, if you didn't hustle to dinner, you didn't get to eat. You had to move.
Right. You got to go. So I see some early, and now especially with your parents having to raise three children all at one time, all going through those states. I'm four children at one time, three children going through the same crappy stages. If you have kids, you know them, you know, that's wild.
Yeah.
That's got to be. So that's got to put you from the very beginning of you remembering things. I'm sure you saw your parents hustle with you all, with you three. Like, hey, let's go. You know, it's always, hey, we got to go. It's. I'm sure you've always heard, we got to go. Because with triplets, it's like, it's probably, we got to go. You know, you're always on that push.
Yeah, no.
That's awesome.
Very first house I can remember living in, it's probably four or five, when you start to remember stuff. My dad actually built that home, like, with his own hands. Like, he poured the foundations. He obviously had a lot of help, but he was there at the job site, like, doing that. And he's not a contractor. He is the probably least capable contractor you'd ever meet. But he taught himself how to lay tile, frame a house, do the siding, do the roofing, all that, just so that he could save a little bit of money and be a part of it. So that's like the first memory I have is that home and him telling me, it's like, I built that. I laid that foundation. I put that brick in that wall. It's like, oh.
And you know, cool. And it's not bragging. It's pride. And he wants to show, hey, I did this. I want to show you what a person can do, you know, when they put their mind to it and it's hard work. And this is what I want you to do, laying that foundation, laying paving that road for you. I think that's awesome. I was raised in on like a farm-ish. Yeah. I say farm-ish because I say farm and people think like Idaho, like, oh, wow, he had acres and acres of just, you know, corn fields or maybe strawberry fields or watermelon. No. Yeah. My grandfather, along with his two brothers, bought 10 acres of property in Tampa, Florida, right after World War II, right when they came back from World War II. My great uncle sold their piece of property. My grandfather stayed with his three and a half acres. My father was raised on that property. I was raised on that property. When, you know, my granddad bought the property, it was a dirt road. By the time I was raised on it, we were living on this property driveway leading into an 8-lane highway. You know, I mean, right there. And the earliest memories I have are helping my dad build parts of the house, help, you know, building new rooms, building, you know, just a barn in the back, you know, just laying tile, you know, learning. And I learned all those things. And I think that's one of the things, I know that's one of the things, seeing my dad and my mom both had hustle, different types of hustle. And my dad's hustle was like nose to the grindstone. Hammered up. I don't think my dad's worked out a day in his life, but he's got like this old man muscle.
Yeah.
You know, like like, how do you, like, I give him a hug. I'm like, where did all this muscle come from? You know?
Yeah.
Swinging that hammer, lifting that wood, throwing those blocks around, I guess.
Yeah.
So, that's awesome. Where it comes from. So Connor, I just wonder real quick, when was the first job? How old were you when you had your first job?
Well, what would you consider a job? Like, I had to fill out an application and get approved, or like first time I made money by doing something?
First time you made money by doing something, and not like go clean your room, here's some money, but yeah, a legit job working under the table. That's how we get started.
So there's two of them about the same time. One is I was that kid right out front of your neighborhood, lemonade stand with a, hey, I'll also mow your lawn for 10 bucks or something like that.
Yes.
And the second is my grandfather owned a lot of flower lots, like literally like during Easter and Mother's Day, he would rent these tents, stand them up at gas stations and just plop us at a lot and say, all right, you sell flowers. So a lot of stories. Those are like the first two jobs that I really ever had, probably when I was 11, maybe 10, early 10, 11. On. Yeah.
Very good. Yeah. See that, things like that, it solidifies some foundation of hustle, work. Awesome. So Connor, I got a question for you.
Yeah.
All right. This is what we're all here for. What is your worst job story? Or what story did you bring to us today to thrill and delight us in your sadness?
So all of you, yeah. I don't want pity. I want you guys to feel better about yourself. That's
right.
There's one big one, and then there's a smaller one that's just kind of funny, but I'll tell the big one first. So I think you and I talked about this a little bit last time, but I was a real estate investor.
Yeah.
I don't really like telling people, because immediately when I say that, there's a lot of people saying, oh, you know, I invest in real estate. And
right.
A lot of scammers doing that. I was, when I was a freshman in college, I was 19 years old. That is when I started flipping homes. So literally, I would source the deal. I worked with this guy for free to teach me how to evaluate property, how to get contract. Like, he taught me everything he knew about real estate, flipping homes. And I just worked for free for like a year and a half to learn all that. First home I ever bought. So this is the story. I was working with that guy. I did all of the work for this deal, right? I went to the home, talked with the owners, got the price, talked to the contractors, got the repair estimates, put together the financials so we could go raise some funds from local investors as well, who invest in folks like me and this other guy. And ended up buying this home. It was like 70 grand, and I needed to put like 15, 20 grand into it or something. And I used this contractor that another friend of mine had recommended. But this is the story. So I was flipping it towards the end of the year. It was like October, November when I started. And I was working with this contractor. Anyone who's ever done real estate, I'll tell you, contractors are the hardest part to get right and the easiest place to go wrong.
Yep.
Can't find.
Have you ever worked with contractors? I don't want to spoil anything, but within 38 jobs, I've worked with contractors a good amount, and you're absolutely right. It can mess up. That can mess up you're out there. You're at their whim. You know, you're out there.
Yep. So I created this whole contract. Again, I didn't do it all on my own. I had a whole network of real estate investors that were advising me. So I created the contracts with this guy, what's called draw schedule. So it's like, you do this little bit of work, you get this much money. You do this little bit of work, you get this much money. So you can kind of like pace out what you're paying these folks. So it comes to we're at the very end of the deal, right? Everything's pretty much done. We just need to slap a coat of paint on things, touch up some of the woodwork, add some doors. Like, basically, we're doing all the finishing work, but all the big stuff's done. And this contractor comes to me and he says, I'm out of money. I need the last payment. It was like $3,800, four grand or something like that. And I was 19 at the time. So I was like, okay, yeah, I'll just give him the money. He'll finish it up and we'll be good. Sure. And it was like December 22nd. When I did this, okay.
This is how business works. Oh, December 22nd.
Date's important.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
I give this guy this money. He says it'll take him a day to, you know, go get the doors, get the trim, set everything up. And I go to the house the next day. Nothing's done. Call him. Phone's been disconnected. Text him. No response. Basically, this guy just ghosted me. So.
Yeah.
And I'm with 4 grand,
you didn't check in with your real estate group before you paid them. Yeah,
correct. And then so I go home, I'm talking to my dad.
I'm like, hey, so I did this thing and it gave the contractor the last draw. He's like, oh, the house is done. I was like, I wouldn't say that. And he's like, what have you done? It's like, how much was that? I was like, $4,000. He's like, you just lost $4,000. I was like,
yeah.
Well, yeah, he's not responding. And he's like, we have this home under, it's already been sold, right? We had sold the home before we finished it. This work needs to get done like by the end of this week. It's like, you have 3 days to get this work done. And I was like, I don't have anybody to do it. He's like, figure it out. So I ended up Christmas Eve. Yeah.
This is a Christmas story on Netflix waiting to happen. Okay. Mm-hmm. This is like you 3 days before Christmas. 3 days before Christmas, you are out $4,000. Not only are you out $4,000, just like gone.
Yeah.
You're also out a house being completed.
And I still need to pay somebody to complete the work.
So you're out hopefully $8,000, but if it's so close so quick, maybe they're gonna charge more money for all right, keep going. This is not good.
So here
and wait, how old were you?
19 at the
time. Oh dude, that's stressful, man.
So it's like December 23rd, 24th, 25th. This is what happened. I went to Home Depot, I bought all the materials, I delivered them to the house, and I spent the entire Christmas Eve, the entire Day, other than open presents with my family in the morning, skipped off to the home. I spent basically like 30 hours over 23rd, 24th, 25th, and the 26th teaching myself how to hang doors, how to put trim in, how to paint, although that's not really what you teach yourself, and then doing all of that finishing work on the home myself during Christmas.
Dude.
Everything got done. And I, $4,000, I was getting all the money that we made in profit. So at the end of the day, that ended up costing me like $6,000 in money that I didn't get to make because I gave this guy the money. Right. Now, here's the kicker. I connected with him on Facebook like a few months later, just found him.
And he accepted?
Yeah, I guess he forgot who I was. He bought a brand new motorcycle 2 days after I'd given him that check. So like, I get on, I'm like, I bring my dad into like, yo, dad. I was like, yo, dad. I was like, look, he has a brand new motorcycle. He's like, that's what he's spending on.
No. You bought him a motorcycle.
Yeah. I bought him a motorcycle.
Merry Christmas. So dude, from now on, if you are ever asked, what's the best Christmas gift you've ever given anyone? You just own it. You know what? I bought someone a motorcycle. They were, I barely even knew him. Just, whoa, Connor, you're amazing. Dude, that is a crazy story. Much props for going out there and get that junk done yourself. Yeah. Right. So you grew up seeing your dad do it. So same situation. So, or like seeing my dad build stuff. And, you know, we're there. I'm sure like you were there with your dad helping him by here's a nail, here's a tape measure, you know, and stuff like that at first, and then slowly getting more. But he was the one hanging the doors. He was the one doing that. So when you're having to do it yourself, thank you, dad, for information and YouTube, right?
Yeah.
Literally
YouTube was how to frame in a door. Just click. Watch that 20-minute video. All right. Time to go. Yeah. And my dad was like, hell no, I'm not coming to this house on Christmas Eve. And you made this mess. You cleaned this up. Yeah. I was like,
good.
Oh, God. Oh, good. My God.
This sucks, right?
Yeah. And this was while going through math. I was in college. I was studying math. So nights and weekends there too.
What year was this? Around what year?
2015. That's 2015. That 2014 into 2015.
Oh man, dude, that is stressful. What I like. So the tagline for the show 38 at 38 is previously stressful, presently hilarious work stories. And that's one thing that's super important. A bunch of these stories, when you're living them, they're like, when you're talking about them now, we can laugh about them. We can joke about, oh my goodness, you bought that guy a motorcycle. We can laugh about it now. But in 2014, 2015, I was like, if, June 2015. And you text me up and you're like, bro, this contractor bought a brand new motorcycle. And I'm like, ha ha, you got him a Christmas present. It probably wouldn't be as funny. It probably wouldn't be as funny.
Not at all.
But it's funny because you've learned, you're okay. I'm sure, like many people, when you're going through the go-throughs, you're like, what next? How am I going to get out of it? You look back on now.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh, especially 19. So I remember thinking this when I was in high school. 10th grade year was really rough for me. Really rough. And just for a lot of reasons that I can look back now and say, oh, those are ridiculous reasons. Those were small reasons. But at 10th grade and around that age, up until probably early 20s, if you're going through something really stressful, it's probably the most stressful thing you've ever gone through just because of the life experience. Haven't had that many life experiences. So I remember telling myself, and I remember where I was standing in the lunchroom when I thought about this. And I said, when I become an adult, I'm going to remember that these stressful experiences when I was younger were not just trivial. They were painful. And I got to remember that for the other people, other young people, you know, when I'm older, that they're going through that. And 19 years old, dude, that is a $4,000 lost. And dude, that is a lot of stress to go through. That's an intense work story, man. That is an intense work story.
I got another word. So that's where I learned the most valuable lesson, which was, I talked about it with my dad, and I still do this day. Yeah, you remember Rick? And my dad, he just starts belly laughing. He's like, you're the guy you bought the motorcycle for. I'm like, I was like, yeah, wild times. It's like something we definitely laugh about.
Quick, did you ever confront him about it? Did you ever DM him like,
We actually saw him. We saw him. Me and my dad, my whole family we always do Sunday morning. We go to breakfast as a family. So there's this local shop that was like 2 miles from my house where I was living with my parents at the time. And we just show up and Rick, guy's face is burned into my memory, shows up. And my dad's like, hey, isn't that the guy? And I was like,
oh,
that's him. And my dad's like, I'm going to go talk to him. I was like, no, don't. I was like, It's over. Like we can laugh about it. This was like literally 4 years after it happened. This was like,
oh my goodness.
This was like just before COVID in like 2019 sometime. And so my dad ends up having like a 5 or 10 minute conversation with him. And apparently what had happened was not only did he buy that motorcycle, but his buddy.
Hold on, Connor, before you continue, I got to correct your sentence. When you're going to explain something like that. No. When you're going to explain something like that, you got to say, now, see what happened was.
Yeah.
Now, see what happened was.
He said something to the effect of, my buddy was behind on his mortgage payments, and I basically made sure he didn't get his house foreclosed on. And I was like sitting there talking to him. I was like, I don't give an F about your buddy. I was like, you stole $4,000 from me. He's like,
right.
Oh, and then he immediately, he's like, oh, well, you know, I still do contracting. Like that was the first.
He's pitching himself?
Yeah. And he's like, I'll do free work for you. And I was like, let's go to breakfast, Dad. I was like, I'm done. Like,
I'll do free work for you. Thanks.
No,
but if I couldn't rely on you for money I was paying you, you know, why would there be value there for you to actually show up and do solid work?
So
wow.
Puts it in perspective. Also, losing $4,000 is the most amount of money I've ever lost in real estate. And maybe this could be another story some other time, or I could tell a little bit of it now. I lost in 2020 about $100,000 of my own money.
Yeah, that's right. I think you mentioned something like
flipping
that
real estate.
Golly.
So that wasn't really the worst. It's not like the worst work experience. It is the worst life experience I've ever had. Taught me. Sheesh. But now I'm on the other side. Like you said, making fun of it. I'm on the other side of it now.
Yeah.
I have just that single has altered the trajectory of my life. And like when you're going through it, you're like, I'm going down. It's like trajectory, we're crashing. And looking back at it, it's like very clearly the way I act and who I became and what I do now and the way I think about things and just the quality of my life. It's just like I'm on this way upward trajectory now that all started with that event, even though it was the darkest time of my life for sure.
Dude, that is – so people listening right now are probably like, what? Why didn't he do that story?
Yeah.
What? But that's great because guess what I like? Cliffhangers. And the next time you're on, because they're definitely going to be next time because one, love you. You're great. Two, I want to hear about this 120 grand that got gone. So you also said you had the funny story. But what was the lesson that you learned from the $4,000 being donated?
Set expectations and hold them. There's two parts. And I brought this into all the relationships I have, not only with my fiance, but with my friends, with my family. It's like when you start to mismatch expectations or expectations go unsaid, that's when that difference starts to grind away at the quality of the relationship, the quality of the life. And that's exactly what had happened. Is we had signed a contract that stipulated expectations. You get paid for doing exactly these things. And then I waffled on it. I was like, oh, yeah, whatever. Boom, here's the check, even though you don't deserve it right now. I didn't hold it. And if I would have done that, I don't know what would have happened, but maybe the work would have gotten done and I wouldn't have had to spend my Christmas Eve doing that stuff. That's the biggest lesson, is clarify the expectations up front in all of your relationships and then hold fast to them.
Do y'all hear that, everyone? I love that. Golly, you were robbed of $4,000 and the biggest lesson you learned wasn't pointing the finger out of make sure to trust people or make sure you got to find out who you trust because some people can do you wrong or done. No, it was set the expectations and stick to them. Not like have them. When you said that, I was like, well, how are you going to force someone else? No, you.
Yeah.
You stick to them and you put the blame, not the blame, maybe the onus, the responsibility on yourself. Hey, if I would have stuck to those stipulations, I wouldn't be in this situation.
Yeah.
You know, it didn't start with him taking the money. It started with you giving the money. It started with him asking for the money. No, it started when you said, you know what? All right, fine. We will change. We'll do an audible. We'll change up this. You know, don't even worry about it. We're good.
Yeah.
Stick to that contract. You can't. What was it? You can't manage people. You have to manage agreements. You can lead people. The best way to lead people and you manage agreements. So I think that's fantastic. What a great lesson. Thank you. All right. Now what's up with that, that funny other, smaller funny story. Let's hear that.
So I was flipping another home. This one ended up going with, actually I ended up not even selling it. I own the home to this day. It's a rental of mine, but, I had spent my nights and my weekend with my brother-in-law who wanted to do real estate with me and my sister. And he's always a bit of a handyman actually. So he actually knows how to do this stuff. So we were framing the home, hanging the drywall, whatever. So we were hanging drywall, and anyone who has ever hung drywall knows two things. It sucks.
Yeah.
And it really sucks. It's like,
it's
so like you have to get it perfect and then you have to mud it and then you have to dry it. Then you have to remud it. And then you got to see if it's crack, just a mess. And we had never done it before. So it took us literally like a month of working nights and weekends to get one single room drywalled and mudded. And so I was like, JB, his name's JB. I was like, you know, you know a lot of contractors. You work at a lumber company. So like you meet contractors every day. They're coming in to buy your materials and your services. Like, just get one of them. I'll pay any amount of money right now. We'll just have them drywall the rest of the home. So, okay.
Right.
So we did that and we found a guy. It's like $1,200, $1,400 to drywall the rest of the home. I was like, I'll pay that out of my own pocket.
Think about how much time for a month and then equate that to how much your effort is worth in dollars.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And you guys got one room done?
Yeah. One out of.
So really.
Yeah.
So really like $1,200, $1,400. $1,500 for the whole house? I mean, it probably would have been the same if it was just one room done, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
We had all of the materials in the home already and it was a blank slate. It was just down to the framing. So it's like all the guys had to do is come in with their stilts, come in with the drills to mix the mud. And like everything was there. We already had the tape. We already had the mud. We already had the drywall. So it's like, oh, $1,400, $1,500 for just the labor. And the funny part is they finished the entire home in a weekend, like
done
2 days later.
And it looked good.
It looked good.
I bet.
I walked in and the fathers were on the stilts hanging the I walked in one night. Fathers were hanging the drywall on stilts and screwing it in. The sons were taking the drywall and handing it to their dads on the stilts. And the mothers and the daughters were mixing the mud with the drills. I was like, they got a whole fucking operation going on in here.
They got it all going.
I was like, this is way better than what I was doing. But here's the funny part. So I walk out back. I start smelling something. And I look to my left. It's very clear. Even though we had a working bathroom, that somebody literally pooped on the side of the home, not next to the home, not near the home, not on, like there was a streak about butt level on the siding, home? On the siding. And so I'm like,
the streak going down or sideways?
Sideways.
What?
Yes. I'm not even joking you. And I'm like, there with my brother-in-law, I'm like, is that what I think it is? And JB's like, yeah, somebody literally pooped on the home. And so I like go back inside. I pull one of the dudes aside. I was like, hey, can you come outside? I need to talk to you. Comes outside. I was like, listen, we have a working toilet. You guys just use the – I don't know what you've worked on in the past. Just use the toilet, dude. I'm not right. burnt up about it. Second, this needs to be gone when I come back tomorrow. And he was like, that wasn't us. It must have been a cat. Like literally just starts I'm like a cat jumped 2 feet off the ground and smeared its ass on the siding. I was like,
it's a very, very agile cat.
Yeah, very. I was like, I don't care. This needs to be cleaned up when I come back tomorrow. Do whatever you gotta do. And walked out. Right. Came back the next day, it was gone.
How old were the kids?
Like 13, 14 maybe.
That sounds like a stupid thing a stupid boy would do. Like not a stupid boy, but just a boy trying to make someone laugh. I mean, I'm not excusing it nor saying, yeah my son's going to. But that sounds like a mischievous kid. Like, that sounds like something. Hopefully it wasn't the parents.
Yeah, for real.
That's ridiculous.
I was like, listen, bud. I was like, I don't care. I don't want to know. So.
Awesome. Dude, well, thank you so much for those stories. I greatly appreciate it. Now, a word from our sponsor.
Hi, I'm Ray Rossini.
And I'm Tony Francisco, and we're the hosts of MSP Dispatch.
Every Tuesday and Friday, we'll bring you the news, community events, and discussions that are important to MSPs today. Whenever possible, we'll also include industry experts to provide their insight, and all within 30 minutes.
Available on YouTube, Pocket Casts, Spotify, iTunes, and your favorite podcatcher in audio or video form. We're everywhere you want us to be.
We hope to see you next time on MSP Dispatch, your source for news, community events, and commentary in the MSP channel.
And we're back. I'm sure that was enough time to cut. Awesome. All right. So I'm excited about this part. I'm excited about the whole, obviously, this whole episode. But I'm excited about this part because this is the part where I get to hear what that quote was, what the quote was that that Connor chose and that relates to one of the stories that we've had, that I've had so far. I've talked about this is episode 3. So far, I talked about last episode was selling Yellow Page ads, which is a very old sentence. And I talked about Champ Sports and meeting Derek Jeter and getting my life threatened. So fun time. So I'm excited to hear, find out what this one's going to be. Go for it.
The quote is, that I want to hear about is, you never forget your first crack rock.
Yes. Very good. You never forget your first crack rock. So this is definitely one of those like previously stressful, currently hilarious. Like, you got to be able to laugh about it now. So I talked about how both my parents are hustlers. They hustle, right? And my mother, they got divorced when I was 3 years old. So my mother's hustle was different. My mother's hustle was start a business, build up a business, run a business, make money, be an entrepreneur. Yep. And when I was 10 years old, and I'm counting this because this is family. When my mother looked at family business, it wasn't like, okay, kids, go play in the corner or be quiet in the corner and while I work, which is great. Hey, for a parent to go out there and run their own company and also have their kids there, that's rough. That's rough to do. And manage it. My mother was like, get to work. You know what you need to be doing. And if you don't, you haven't been paying attention. Figure something out. We need to run this. And when my mother was 10 years old, when I was 10 years old, when my mother was 10, very, very young. Latin families, we get started. But I was 10 years old, and my mother and her husband, my stepfather at the time, they started a, they opened up a convenience store called DNR. And that's the initials of my sisters, DNR Groceries, DNR Groceries. And the neighborhood, it was a small neighborhood grocery store, or like a little convenience store. No gas or anything, just, you know, just chips. This is a gas station without the gas, right? Small little convenience store in the neighborhood. This neighborhood that it was in was like beautiful homes. I mean, like gorgeous homes, like the spotlight of Tampa. Beautiful theater there where like plays were showing, like movies, but like specialty movies and stuff like that. And it was gorgeous, just like that in the 1920s. In the 1920s, this spot, this neighborhood was amazing. Right. It's a little neighborhood called Sulphur Springs in Tampa. If anyone's listening from Tampa, they just went, and it is a rough neighborhood. Even now, it still is a very, very, rough neighborhood. And, my mother and her husband, they bought this house that was maybe built in 1913. I mean, it was an old, you know, wooden frame house. It was up on stilts a little bit, you know, like about, there's like a crawl space about a foot above, a little porch in front. I mean, it looked like what you would imagine an old timey small house would be, you know, and in the middle of this neighborhood that the neighborhood hasn't really advanced much. So, I mean, maybe some of the newer houses, but this house was like, I wouldn't be surprised, like original owner, or like she, the original owner, maybe the daughter grew up in that house and she passed away in that house. Like the whole, nothing was changed in this house. And it wasn't like it was kept updated. And they bought that house and they said, we're going to turn this in. Now, first of all, super props up to them seeing an opportunity. There wasn't a neighborhood grocery store around, or like a little market around. Mm-hmm. And so they bought this house and turned it into a convenience store. And there were so many crazy little memories in there. We, you know, we had the everything that you would have, also like a little deli. So me, 10 years old, little short, roly-poly, I was short and well overweight, like going and making like 50 Cuban sandwiches in the morning, just in there, da-da-da-da, you know, after or in, on the weekends and summer, just making. And I'm sitting there barely above the deli case. And people are coming back. Yeah, let me get a pound of ham, pound of cheese. And I'm just like, oh, you got it. You know, and I'm back there slicing on this. To me, you know, this is a huge meat slicer, you know, 10 years old. I'm just back there, you know. And even the a rough neighborhood, and like the customers were like, is that kid okay? is that kid okay? Should that kid be doing this?
Labor laws, you know, to prevent this?
Yeah. Is this safe? Is this okay? But I guess it was. This store was so creepy. It was basically gutted out, but like the back, and it wasn't a big house, but the back half of the store was like storage, like warehouse. There was a door, you know, and then it would just be the rest of the house. And that's right. Somebody did use it as a grocery store beforehand or something, because in the back was a huge like meat cooler. Like, okay, just start thinking about all the creepiest things. You open up this door, it's 10-foot ceilings. There's one light switch that is all the way at the top that no one's changed, and is basically an Edison bulb. And it's like that dim. And there's just wood panels in the back. Wood panels were creaking where you can see kind of the light from the outside, right? And even though it's daytime, that door has a close because I have the door open because I want some kind of semblance of human interaction when I have to go back there and get some stuff. And my mom's like, close the door. We don't need to see any. No one needs to see back there. So I'm back there by myself, just creeped out as anything. Boxes stacked up with inventory. Creepy time for a 10-year-old. Best thing about it was that there were we had two video games, arcades in there, which one was Pac-Man, and the other one was Super Street Fighter 2. and we tore that up. That was a lot of fun. That was a lot of fun trying to get better at that game and yelling at the computer for cheating, because that's what always happens. The computer's cheating.
Yeah.
Computer's cheating. Mom, it ate my quarter. Can I get the key to get the quarter back out, please, so I can play it again? But, I mean, that rough neighborhood held up at gunpoint twice, right? Yeah. Wow. And the first time should have been like, I'm out. Luckily enough, I wasn't there. Well, luckily, fortunately, I wasn't there for both of them. But my sisters were there for one of them, and my older brother was there for another one. I mean, that's wild, wild times. That was – these things happen. So we hired this kid, or we – my mom hired this neighborhood kid, 15 years old, probably 16, 15 years old, maybe if that – to come out and, or to stock, you know, to help out, to work in the meat, the deli little area, cut up the meats and whatnot. And, I think he was delivering, he made a sandwich and he was delivering it to his grandmother down the street. And my mom said, you know, just go with him, you know, just go with him, walk down the street. It's fine. Now, my mom, I knew that this was not a safe neighborhood, but my mom grew up in like New York in the 70s.
Yeah.
So she's like, she's strong. She's tough. She's like I came back from the bus stop one time crying because I got into a fight. She's like, you got into a fight? Did he hit you? I'm like, no. And she's like, so wait, he didn't hit you? Well, no, he tried to hit me. I blocked it. And you're just messing with me a lot. And she's like, and you left? She's like, did you defend yourself? She was like, oh, I was just like, she goes, you get back down to the bus stop. I'm not driving you to school. You are going to go back down. You're going to handle your business. I mean, my mom was, she didn't play around. She was tough. So she saw that neighborhood, I'm sure, is like, okay,
in the park.
Handle it, you know, handle it. So, and there were, I mean, there were, we had a lot of cops who were our friends at that store, because there were a lot of cops always in that neighborhood. And we definitely needed, you want a free what? You want a free what? That's basically what it was. Hey, how you doing, officer? Whatever. You want a free what? You know, go for it. You know, we need you on our side. And so I was walking with this kid down to his grandmother's, and this other guy, grown adult that I don't know. And apparently he knew him. And they were like, oh, so what do you got? Oh, he's like, oh, I'm just slinging. I'm just out here slinging. You know, I'm trying to get rid of this inventory. And I'm like, oh, he's a business owner too. he's a business owner too.
He's a young entrepreneur.
Yeah, he's a young entrepreneur. So he's like, and he's standing on a corner. And, you know, he's like, yeah. And we are standing on a corner two blocks away from the store. So I can kind of still see the store, right? I can still see the store. And he's like, and he pulls out a couple baggies and they're crack rocks. I'd never seen a crack rock. I've never seen any drugs. I'm 10 years old. And the other kid was unfazed. And he's like, oh, okay. Then he said, hey, hold on for a second. Stay here. Hold these. Give them to the other kid. Hold on to these real quick. I'll be right back. But just stay here. If anyone comes, just tell them to hold on. And then I'll be right back. If anyone asks you for anything, just say, hold on, give me five. And the guy goes, bye, and leaves. And now I am standing on a street corner with this one kid who has two crack rocks in his pocket. And now we are substitute drug dealers. We are. And I'm like, what is, and I'm thinking, okay, mom told me to do this, to go with him.
Being a crack dealer was job number 39.
Which brings, you see, if you get five of your friends to sell crack rocks and they get five of their friends, you can be in platinum crack rock level in no time.
That's how Herbalife ever was invented.
That's exactly how Herbalife was invented. So I became, that really should be, it shouldn't be the job DNR groceries. It should be substitute crack dealer. So luckily no one came by. Substitute crack dealer. No one came by for that time. The kid I was with, I can tell he was like, what's it called? He was like kind of brave at first. And you're like, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I got trying to be cool. You know, oh yeah, I got this. But as time went by, he started getting more nervous because the guy said, I'll be back in five. Right. I'll be back in five. The dude came back in 30 minutes. Okay. So 30 minutes, this is before cell phones, right? Before cell phones. So I'm thinking in my mind, I'm sweating. I'm like, well, I'm sweating because I'm also short, overweight, and it's summer in Florida. But I'm also sweating because I'm like, my mom is going to kill me. His grandmother's house is one block down. We should have been way back by then. Oh, mom's going to come out and she's going to see me standing on the corner, like joking around. And I'm going to have to tell her that I'm here. He's got a crack rock. And now is this guy going to, then I've got, these are so stressful for a 10-year-old,
yeah.
a 10-year-old to be thinking, I got to tell my mom the truth. No, I can't tell my mom the truth because then my mom is going to, he's going to call the cops on that guy. And then that guy is going to be mad. Then he's going to come and retaliate on me. He's going to find me.
Yeah.
Like a 10-year-old. That's my mind. This adult crack dealer is going to go hunt down a 10-year-old, you know, and I'm freaking out. So 30 minutes comes by. I'm like, go. We went to go back and he goes, hold on. We got to take this to my grandmother still. So we got to go and pass this guy back. We pass him back. Shortly after we walked away, a car pulled up, which was like, I don't know if the car was waiting.
Right.
For the guy, or if it was just by pure luck, we could have been the guys talking to the car. I would have been taken. Oh yeah, I can. What would you like me to get your information? So narc, would you like me to get? I'll have him call you back.
What's your first, last, social security, current place?
Yeah. I'm just trying to be a diligent substitute crack dealer. Yeah. Thank you so much. I'm an intern. I'm a crack intern. So I finally get back to the store. And my mom, I go, hey, mom. She goes, hey. And she's busy. I go, okay, I'm back. She goes, okay. Like she didn't even
know that you were gone.
She was she was like, oh, he must have been there and back and on the way back. I think it was years later that I was like, yeah, that was a crack rock. And she was like, what are you even talking about? I was like, yeah, mom, I went. Of course, it's solidified in my mind. But of course, for her, it's like, yeah. I didn't even know you went and came back. What was that? And she was, of course, she didn't. She's like, no, that didn't happen. Like, what do you mean it didn't happen? I lived it. You weren't there. You didn't know that I was alive for that time. I could have been. What if I was good? What if a car came up and I was like, yeah, well, what would you like? And I hustled. I sold more than I was for a higher rate. And the guy came back and was like, man, you're a natural talent at this. We're going to get you right up the ladder. I've been promoted.
Crack intern.
I could have been. I'm no longer the crack intern. You are now the crack assistant. You are now the
assistant crack assistant.
I'm the crack assistant.
The crack assistant.
I'm the assistant crack manager. You're the assistant to the
crack manager.
So. The way that whole story ends, this whole thing blows up, or no pun intended. Wait for it. How long did they have the store? Probably a year. Now, as an adult looking back at this, I'm like, man, all to open up a retail store and get that up and going and the inventory and all of that. And to only have – that's so much prep to only have it going for a year, right? Why would you sell it? Why would you get rid of it? Oh, they didn't. Somebody set it on fire. Somebody set the whole – how everything in the middle of the night on fire. Now, here is where I can say – I can say this easily because my mother's husband at that time, her ex-husband now, he's – he's not the nicest guy, saying it very, 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 very lightly and being nice because he is the father to my sisters. But everything was under his name, so I'm okay with saying this because my mom is free in this, I think. So the house burned down, but this was also after arguments that I heard between my mother and her husband about closing it, selling it, getting rid of it, like it was causing issues. Also after the second holdup, and magically all the problems were solved because the store was burned down and insurance took care of everything.
Yeah. Interesting.
There were also some rumors afterwards that the story was some kids did it because my mother refused to sell them beer the day before or something like that. And they got really mad, or cigarettes, one of the two. And they got really mad. But I'm just saying it came at a very convenient time. I'm just saying fire came at a very convenient time when nobody was around. No one saw anything. No one saw anything.
Maybe it was the guy you had met, and he was just wanted to get his star intern back on the streets.
I'd be walking down the streets. He just pulls up. He's like, "Hey, man, hey, come on! You're trying to recruit me. Look, man, you've got some natural talent. Look, man, I'm just into slicing meats. Yeah. All I do is slice meats, and I play
Super Street Fighter. Not dope.
Yeah. He's like, "Yeah, I sling sandwiches. Not dope, son." And he was like, "Hey, so let me paint this picture. Let's say you weren't slinging sandwiches. Let's say that you had your career options open. Would you then maybe look into being a street pharmaceutical rep?" Like, "Well, I don't know. Maybe." Store catches on fire.
Exactly.
So here's the thing. What did I learn from that job experience?
What did you learn? Beauty's in the eye of the beholder.
Beauty's in the eye of the crack holder. You know what I would learn? I learned to, in certain situations, to keep a cool head, to like that, not just the crack experience, but that whole experience, mm-hmm. you know, to keep a cool head when things go crazy. Because there were, now mind you, okay, if you have a crack dealer two streets down, and then you've been held up two times, it's not like every day is a picnic in paradise and whoops, oh, here's a day with the crack dealer. And there were people that came in there and just mad, screaming, yelling. Yeah. And I see my mom, she's just like cold. Like, she's like, "Okay, and what? All right, are you done? All right, so you wanted Marlboro menthol in a box?" You know, it was just so, you know, cool. So I think that if I can look back and say, you know, certain situations and events in our lives give us, you know, these certain building blocks, these foundations. And, you know, I think that's one thing I can easily take away from that is being cool in some really wild situations. I've been there when I was there when we were getting yelled at for some reason, and the chip stand was just like thrown over and knocked over. Now you think about that now and you're like, "Oh, that's crazy. That's wild." Maybe you've been in a store where you've seen someone do that or whatever, seen on TV. Put all of this experience in the mind of a 10-year-old and the view in the eyes of a 10-year-old. And, you know, a lot of people, some people I can say, "Oh, that's horrible. That's horrible." I stayed safe. I stayed safe. And I learned, like I said, I learned, I think, a good amount of just being cool. Things are, and those same, some of the people, "Rah!" And my mom just straight cool as a cucumber. Like, and the next day, yeah, menthols, what do you want? And the next day, "Hey, how you doing, Miss Karina? Doing all right?" "Yeah, yeah. Sorry about yesterday. Can I just get..." You know, it's like, my mom's like, "Okay." You know, like just not letting it bother you. I absolutely love that. So yeah, there's my story. How about that? Substitute crack dealer. That's what it's going to be.
When I heard that, when I got that quote, did not think actual crack rocks were involved. I thought it was going to be something like, "You never forget the first dollar you made on your own." It's like, that's the story I thought I was going to get. It's like, you mowed a lawn or you sold some lemonade, immediately you're hooked. It's like, nope.
Crack.
Crack rocks. Okay.
That's where I like to throw in a little twist. And that was the twist. It was really a crack rock. And it was two crack rocks. And it's not, I should say, the quote was what? Yeah, you never forget your first crack rock, first two crack rocks. It was also the very last time. It was, I guess, you never forget the one and only time you've ever seen crack rock.
You should have phrased it as, "Why one crack rock is enough."
Yeah, exactly. He's like, "Can you hold on to this one?" And we're like, "Ugh." And he's like, "And also this one." No, one is too much.
I need one hand for the sandwich. I need one hand for the rock. Where am I putting the other one?
where am I going to put in the other one? I can't put it in my pocket. I'm strapped.
Yeah.
No, I was not a strapped 10-year-old walking around with a gun. That'd be ridiculous. Awesome. Connor, thank you so very much. I really appreciate this time, you spent with me. I like your story, man. I love the stories that are wild, but also I love putting things back to the human element and just looking back and at the context of where you were, you know, when you have these, when you go through these problems, these challenges. And man, that is like, now if I go through that same situation with my on it, I'd be like, I'm not going to watch that crack rock. Appreciate it. No, thank you. And I appreciate the offer.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you for thinking me. Thank you for thinking of me to oversee your distribution. Currently, however, the princess is in another castle. I've got to keep playing Mario. Awesome. Thank you so much again. I appreciate it. Where can people find you? People want to get contact with you. Where's the best way they can find you?
Best place would be LinkedIn. So just
nice.
LinkedIn, Connor Swam, or just / Connor Swam comes awesome. Up. Or just email me directly. Just my name, Connor, at finsecurity.com. PHIN security.com.
Dude, are you sure you want to put your email out there? I mean, the reach we have, you're going to be swamped with 2 or 3 emails.
It'll be if it's spam, it just immediately gets reported as spam, and I never ever deal with it again.
But right, you're going to see
chat.
We saw you were recently a guest on 38 at 38. Would you like this new mattress? What, that has nothing to do with anything. Awesome. Yeah. Connor, thank you so very much. Phil, our wonderful producer, we thank you so very much as well. And anything else, any final words from you, Connor?
Say no to that crack rock. That's my word of advice.
Say no to crack rock. You've heard it here, guys.
That's his platform. First. Yeah, hopefully not the first, but you've heard it here at least.
Right, you've heard twice. It here. Yeah, Connor Swamp. Do you stand behind that?
I stand behind that. Yeah, awesome. I will not stand on that corner either.
Well, I would not exactly. I'll stand behind that, not on the corner. Connor, thank you so very much. Appreciate it. I appreciate you. And ladies and gentlemen, we will see you next episode. See you.
This has been a broadcast of the MSP Media Network.